Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me this afternoon is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitch.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. It's nice to be back with you, as once again, we have much in abundance of movie news to discuss.
Lots.
So, Chad, let's start off with this. M. Night Shyamalan gets money to make movies. I cannot get money to make a book about Marvel or Star Wars or Josh Trank's Fantastic Four or, you know, Bryan Singer's X-Men or, you know, anything else related to, you know, movies and comic books and nerddom. However, this man can continue to make money and get money to make films that are divisive and turn on huge plot twists. Your thoughts, sir, on Glass and its two-week domination at the box office and his making tons of money.
So, to be fair, he didn't get tons of money to make a movie. He used tons of his money to make Glass.
This is before him and Blum. This was already in the works before Split occurred and became a hit.
Yes. Now, outside of that, I still have not seen Split.
Well, let me tell you about their split there.
I will say the reason I haven't rushed out to see Split is because I talked to you before I saw it. So I will let you regale everybody with all the greatness that happened at Split.
Let me tell you something there, Chad. You know, all of Mr. Shyamalan's movie hinges on a twist. Every single one. It's his gimmick. If you know, we're here on Royal Rumble Sunday, like, he has a gimmick, a definite gimmick, and it involves plot twist. I went into a movie expecting like a big spectacle action movie, like popcorn movie, and I never should have. This man is too subversive for that kind of stuff. So I got like, I'd say a good hour of conversations about how people who think they are superheroes or who think they are have superhuman abilities are only mentally ill people who have frontal lobe damage. That's it. They just have frontal lobe damage. And Sarah Paulson is just trying to convince them that's it. That's all they have is frontal lobe damage. They can't actually bend bars. You know, there's a scientific explanation. Like, the bars were old. Like, there's always a practical reason why you can do these things. You're not actually a superhuman. You're just, you know, you have a damaged frontal lobe. And, you know, that works until, you know, the third act where people actually start, you know, faking, you know, being impaled and, you know, having a fake lobotomy done by changing out lasers and, you know, all this other craziness.
The more you say about this movie, because every time we talk about it, there's something else new that slips in that I didn't know. The more you say about this movie, the less and less I want to see it.
So I guess I probably should say spoilers for Glass, but at this point, if you're listening, like, you really should have figured out that this is... Like, I'm saving you 10 bucks, okay? Like, literally, three-fourths of this movie is talking about superheroes sitting around in a circle, whether it be sitting around in a circle or in the individual rooms, talking about the meaning of superheroes and how they're all just damaged people who have frontal lobe damage. But that's not all, sir. The end, we find out that, you know, actually, Sarah Paulson is the member of an evil organization known as the Cloverfields. They have four-leaf clover tattoos on their wrist. And, they are a group dedicated to eradicating both superheroes and supervillains alike, because where there is one, there must be the other. And the rule of two always applies. So that if there are none, then therefore the world can find balance. And so they go around the world trying to eradicate both superhuman, superhero, and supervillain, so the world may find its balance. And so her and her people execute a plan to take out all three of our leads, which they accomplish successfully in a very brutal manner for all three. And then, of course, after all three are taken care of, Miss Paulson goes to meet with her overlords and tell them that the deed is done in a very quaint pub, where people just stop talking and they look up and they look at her. And at that point, she asks to move on to the next city that she can go and do this with. And once she does that, she, for some reason, don't ask me why, but for some reason, she goes to a comic book store. And she overhears two nerds talking about comic books. And they talk about how the supervillain always has a secret plan other than the plan that he tells you to his face. This gets her thinking. And so she leaves the comic book store, and she goes back to the mental institution to make sure that all the tapes were erased and that everything was taken care of, because the way they explained it to the hospital staff was that these were just people on drugs. You know, yeah, you think you saw some incredible stuff, but this is really just people amped up on drugs. Which, okay. And they allegedly erased all the tape, right? Only to find out that Mr. Glass, while he was, you know, hatching his plan of evil domination, also wheeled his little wheelchair into the computer room, wrote a code for a website to stream all of the cameras onto that website live, so that a recording of that could be made, and so that then that recording could be sent to the primaries of the those left behind, meaning, you know, Dunn's son, Elijah's mother, and of course the little girl, you know, who the Beast let go in Split. And so they then take that information and they disperse it to the world in a Winter Soldier type way, where they like spread it all around the internet and show it to everybody and send it to every major news organization. And so now the secret's out. All these incredible things, including the murder of these individuals, is now online for the world to see. And now other superhumans and supervillains are going to come out of the woodwork, and the world is going to embrace superheroism. This is the end of Glass.
You know what?
And did I mention that the tie that Mr. Glass has to the Beast is that the Beast's father, who, you know, left to go get milk one day and never came back? Yeah, he was actually on the same train as Mr. Dunn in Unbreakable. And so, you know, Mr. Glass is responsible for him becoming who he is, because then he was left with his mother, who was a very messed up individual. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the least offensive thing you told me out of all of that is that Glass created the Beast, basically created the Beast. You know, I can live with that. The rest of that, it's like, why? Just why? I don't want to talk about this, and I don't want to give this any more time than we already have. I don't think it's certain, but I will say, why did he make it a Cloverfield? Because as soon as you say Cloverfield, I think of all the other Cloverfield stuff that has nothing to do with this.
It's a four-leaf clover on everybody's wrist for the secret organization.
He had to know that's what people were going to think, and he could have changed it, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm going to see this thing anytime soon, but, I mean, it won the weekend again, granted.
Things that you do when you're in January.
Yeah, that was my next thing, because it only made $20 million this week, and it beat out the upside, which, relatively speaking, I would think these two movies should not be close together in terms of money made, but here we are, they're only $10 million apart, this January has proven to be
pretty much like every other January in history. You dump something out there and one thing dominates them all. Kung Fu Panda, for example.
Yeah, every now and then there's that one that's like, this is kind of good, and I understand why it's making money.
And the one there would be The Kid Who Would Be King. Unfortunately, no one's going to see it.
Nope. It's fourth on this list. It only made $7.25 million.
Still better than Serenity, the movie that no one knew was coming out, and is actually this year's Annihilation, like the trippy balls to the wall movie that you will like be talking about later.
Like I knew it was coming, but not like,
dude, I watch all kinds of movies and television. Like I'm in the theater constantly. I see trailers. The only reason I knew that this was a thing was because there was a standee in the middle of the hallway. That's it. Like, clearly the marketing department of whatever studio this hails from did not care enough to even try.
Yeah, that is why, because the last few times I've gone, there's a marquee for this thing sitting there. I'm like, oh, what is Serenity? I see McConaughey, so I pay attention. But yeah, now that you mention it, I've seen no trailers for this. Nothing. I have no idea what this movie's about.
This movie is a very messed up movie.
All right. A D-plus cinema score. That is...
That is
terrible.
It was just like Welcome to Marwan. I was the only individual in the theater.
But Marwan, I know it had a better cinema score than this. Like, this is the lowest one I can think of. Like, for context for people that don't know. So cinema score is like off of audience rating. And typically
it's a reaction to, it's the best way to interpret what the audience believed it was getting.
I think that's fair. So I think a average score for cinema score is like an A-.
Or B.
B is like, when you get a B is like you're really, really tepid. Mm-hmm. Like, for comparison's sake, Batman vs. Superman has like a B+, I think. And, you know, people don't like that movie. So think about that movie. And now that this movie has a D+, I know they have them, but this is the lowest one I've seen. That says all I need to know about that movie.
All right. So, Chad, there is a Ghostbusters movie that is going to come out that Paul Feig is not a part of and that there is no female involvement in. So, what are your thoughts on the fact that Crazy Uncle Dan lived long enough to get his movie made?
I'm in this weird space because, like, part of me is, like, happy that people that really love Ghostbusters like you are happy that this movie is happening. But the other part of me is, like, you know, the way a large portion of the fan base reacted to the last movie, y'all don't deserve anything nice, collectively. So it kind of pains me that you're kind of all of those fans are getting, in their mind right now, they're getting what they wanted. The flip for me is going to be when we get more details and those fans find out about those details and they're not going to like all the details and they start turning on this one too. And then I'll be like, see, this is why I didn't think y'all deserved anything nice.
The kids thing. I mean, that's fine. That's what I encourage. My version of this movie back in like the mid-2000s was like Jonah Hill, Jason Segel, Seth Rogen, and Martin Starr. Like, as like a young generation of Ghostbusters, and you could have had one of them playing Oscar and just literally like use Harold Ramis's death as a jumping off point to make the others look at like, look, we've been at this for a long time. Like, it's time to, you know, finally pass the torch and have that torch be passed to his actual son and let them take it. And it's not like those guys are bad at comedy. I mean, in the mid-2000s, like, these guys were like the guys in comedy. They're not ready for primetime players of their era. Now I have a feeling that I don't really know where we're going. I know that there's going to be kids involved. And I know there's going to be a second generation involved. And that's apropos with the son of the original director doing the movie. I get concerned when I start hearing that 2 is like... Everything that I hear is like, the original, the original, the original. And I'm like... There's a movie poster with a ghost that holds up two fingers. Like, the poster for this movie has a ghost holding up three fingers. You don't go from one finger to three. There is a finger in the middle. Okay? Like, we don't skip over the painting. We don't skip over Ivan the Terrible. We don't skip over the creepy art director who, you know, was from Russia and then got body possessed by a 1,000-year-old deity. Like, we don't skip over these things.
I mean, okay, I don't...
That movie gave you freaking Rick Moranis in a Ghostbusters outfit using a proton pack. What is there not to love about that? And Rick Moranis' character believes that he helped break the shell and save the day. So, I mean... And that's the movie that gives you Oscar.
I think from continuity standpoint, that would probably be the thing that stands out from going forward is Oscar. The rest of that stuff is like,
you can be the mayor who saved New York City again.
Again, yeah. And I think that's why everybody hates him too, is because it's like, didn't we do a lot of these same things in the first one? Why are we back here doing the same thing?
Because we had to have the freaking Statue of Liberty walk across New York City and bring the spirit of joy and happiness back to a city that at that point in the 80s was like a very angry, very violent, very drug-filled place.
This is true.
I mean, our president of the United States has a lawyer who is, you know, saying very interesting things now about his legacy. But, like, before he took this job, like, his legacy outside of a failed presidential bid was that he was the mayor who cleaned up New York City after Ed Koch. And that he was the mayor during 9/11 who led the country in the city through the greatest terrorist attack, one of the two greatest terrorist attacks in the history of the country. So, like, you know, New York in, like, the late 80s or the 80s period was not the mega tourist attraction happening place that it is now.
You didn't go to Times Square.
Right. And, like, that's, you know, a joke that's made in time travel movies all the time now. About, you know, what do you mean? You go to Times Square. Like, I mean, it's... So, like, that movie, too, has a very interesting place in real-world New York at that time. And that's what kind of gives it some extra meaning. You also have... too, as a reflection of, I hate to say this, baby boomers thinking about Y2K and thinking about the turn of the century and how they were going to transition into this next millennium and this next century and what kind of changes it was going to bring in, the fear of not leaving a legacy or not having a legacy to lead into that century. And so you also have that context on top of it. So, two, yes, there's nothing as good in two as in one. There's no library scare. There's no, there's no library scare. There's no Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. There's just a blob shell that, you know, encapsulates an art museum. You know, but, and there's a painting that literally is a painting and doesn't, and barely talks for, like, 3/4 of the film. And he actually starts walking around for, like, 5 minutes and then gets defeated.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Zool doesn't really show up until, like, late in the first one.
That's true.
So, like...
But, see, that goes back to the whole, we did these exact things before.
And, like, the freaking female one did it, too.
Well, yeah they did.
They even, you know, hit Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in the nuts. I mean, come on now.
True. I'm not going to sit here and defend... Ghostbusters 2016.
Look, we had a whole podcast on that. I commend Paul Feig for what he did. He made a good Ghostbusters movie, but the problem was there was an attachment to the name of Ghostbusters, and so you couldn't take it outside of that context. So, I mean, I'm all for it. Let's use one and two. Let's not, you know, skip over the second one. If you're gonna have kids, let them be kids or grown up, young adults or whatever. I mean, at this point, I'm sorry, it's 35 years. It's 35 years since the original. It's 32 years since the second one. Like, at this point, Oscar would be my age or a little bit older. Probably somewhere around your age.
He would be a little bit younger than me. So, right. About 30. About 34-ish.
Right in between our two ages. Like, at this point, you get young adults.
Yeah.
You get young adults. You don't go and get the kids from Stranger Things to... take over and start shooting proton packs off.
I would think that would be the way to go. But all I saw was kids. I didn't really look more into that to see if he really meant kids or if he's saying kids in the sense of...
the next generation.
Yeah, but, I mean, Reitman is my age because he's in Ghostbusters 2 and he looks about my age.
Yeah, he asked the question about, my mom says all y'all are full of crap.
Yeah, so... my only question with all this, I'm gonna wait and see mode for everything, but
July 2020.
Is Uncle Bill coming back? That is my question, because he didn't want to come back for a whole bunch of these things.
Well, according to what Crazy Uncle Dan said, because Crazy Uncle Dan and that, so there was an interview, I think it was Rolling Stone or something, where Crazy Uncle Dan went off and just basically bashed Paul Feig. Say he spent too much money, say he didn't listen to us, yada, yada. In that same interview is this talk about, I think we have a new idea. And I think we have a new idea that will work, and I think it's good enough to get Bill and everybody on board. You know, we didn't know that this was what he was talking about, but, I mean, like, Crazy Uncle Dan lived long enough to be right. Which, I mean, to be fair, in those leaked emails, there was a plan for a Channing Tatum, Ryan Gosling team-up male Ghostbusters movie that was supposed to intersect with the female movie, and they were supposed to come together and take on Zool. So it's not like they didn't intend on making male-oriented Ghostbusters ever again. You know?
I still can't believe that. Well, I can believe that it was such an uproar just because they were girls. Nothing about the movie, just because they were girls. And then, you know, the movie.
We do live in different times.
Yeah. Just, yeah, so idiots.
But I am okay with this. I'm happy about this. Let's wait and see. Everything looks really cool. I mean, from my standpoint, where I am, I assume that as soon as he was done with Game Night, he moved right on to this.
Oh, he did Game Night?
I believe so. It was him and my boy Goldstein.
Let's see. I still haven't seen Game Night. I want to. I've heard it's good.
It is fantastic. It should have been nominated for Best Supporting.
Man, he looks like his dad.
Mm-hmm. Tully would have been the last thing.
Yeah. Let's see, last thing as a director. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, which is a fantastic, he gets a great performance out of Charlize Theron in that, so.
All right, well, we'll see. I'm waiting to see. I hope it's good. I'm not as attached to Ghostbusters as most other people are, so I can go either if it's great, good, if it's bad, I can still live.
Okay. So, Chad, there were some Oscar nominations that came out over the weekend, on Tuesday.
It was Tuesday, yeah.
It was Tuesday. My fears, intimate fears, that the King of Wakanda would be shut out for lack of cultural understanding by the few old white men who were left in the Academy were unfounded, and it did receive a Best Picture nomination. Your thoughts on the Academy Award nominations as a whole?
So, I'll start with the Best Picture and Black Panther in the Best Picture. I was never concerned about it getting nominated for Best Picture. Honestly, if it were me, I haven't seen most of these, but I probably wouldn't have nominated it for it. However, I am not upset that it is. I'm actually happy that it is, considering some of the other movies that are up there and the things that I've heard about them. Like, if they can be up there, then there's no reason that Black Panther shouldn't be up there. And I'm specifically talking about Bohemian Rhapsody because I've heard everything I've heard about that movie. It sounds like the movie last year with Gary Oldman, the Winston Churchill movie. It sounds like that. Like he had a good performance in this Lifetime TV special movie. So for Bohemian Rhapsody to be nominated for Best Picture. Once you do that, I'm like, okay, fine. Whoever else is up there, if that was there, then everything else up there is fine with me. But Bohemian has its own, it has other things to do.
Well, okay, so let's explain to people that, like, contrary to popular belief, there is politics in everything.
Of course.
And award season, like, one of the reasons that Harvey Weinstein became an all-encompassing, like, mega producer is because he could put on a hell of an Oscar campaign. The man literally took an Oscar from Steven Spielberg. Like, he got Shakespeare in Love, the Best Picture Oscar, over Saving Private Ryan, which is probably one of the greatest World War II films ever made, with a director in his prime and an actor in his prime, and yet, like, he was able to politic enough to get Shakespeare in Love the win. He propelled The English Patient to a win. Which before the Artist was probably the most derided Best Picture winner ever. Okay? Like, these things are inherently political. So we are in a climate right now where there is basically studios leaking selective information in negativity and mudslinging campaigns to prevent movies from excelling. And as a result of this, this week, a major expose piece was done on Mr. Bryan Singer, basically reiterating the same stories that came out in 2014 when X-Men Days of Future Past was getting ready to come out, and a guy came forward and basically made Kevin Spacey-like allegations against Bryan Singer. And do you know what happened after that? Bryan Singer got the directing gig for Apocalypse.
Yep.
And the keys to a 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea movie that never got made. So the allegations did not hurt him at all. They allowed him to continue to work. They continued to give him money. And do you know what happened is going to happen, has already happened this time?
He's already got another job.
He's already gotten another job. The man got fired off of this movie because, like, the Queen band members were like, you took off without telling us where you were going and you cost us days of production. You're fired. And yet, he is listed as the sole director on the credits by the DGA. So it is his movie. So the piece that was done, while I commend the writer for it, trying to follow in Rena Farrow's, you know, footsteps and trying to do an expose in this and drive the conversation, he was used. He or she was used for the purpose of trying to to take momentum away from Bohemian Rhapsody from getting a nomination, and or to make things very, very, very uncomfortable for Malick as he's on the Best Actor circuit. Well, the same thing with Green Book.
Wait, did you read the whole thing with Bryan Singer?
Most of it.
Okay, I didn't read I read like 3/4. I don't necessarily think it's.
The timing is what it is.
The timing, yes, the time. I do think the timing is deliberate in that this is when Singer should be the most high profile. But I think we're in a different space than we were when, you know, what, 5 years ago when he got that thing. He's listed as the director of Red Sonja now. I imagine that they're going to stand by that right now to be like, y'all ain't pushing us out. But if he starts making this move, I would be completely shocked if he starts making this movie. Not just because of this coming out and what people believe. It seems like they're really trying to make his name toxic now, and anybody that's willing to work with him at this point.
So that guy, there will be a campaign to like bid, like complain and like mark up any actor who signs a contract to be in that movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, James Gunn's out of a job. Okay, James Gunn's out of a job because he made jokes about a 3-year-old peeing, you know, a shower being so weak that a 3-year-old, it feels like a 3-year-old going to the bathroom. Like, he's out of, like, you know, he's out of a job because of that. And this guy, like, is, like, competing with Kevin Spacey for, like, biggest, you know, gay douchebag in Hollywood.
Man, it sounds like it's more than just him. It sounds like this is a whole...
Mr. Ratner as well. Let's not forget about that young man.
Yeah, it's a whole ring. And all the people in Hollywood that try to speak up about it, people just kind of brush it to the side. It sounds like this is a whole ring of people preying on underage people in and around Hollywood. And for that, I hope that this article does work, because they need to bring this kind of crap to an end. And if Bryan Singer's gotta be the first one to go, so be it.
I just, it's bad timing for me. Like, this is hit piece. This is not a hit piece, but it feels like an intentional effort to make things uncomfortable for Malick. Because Malick's the only one let's make everything clear here. Bohemian Rhapsody has no shot winning this Oscar. But Malick does have a legitimate shot at Best Actor. Although I think it's, of all the Academy Awards, I feel like the acting category is the most safe, because the winners have been the same. In all the guilds. I think you're going to end up with either Close or Coleman in the Best Actress category. I think that it's a shoe-in to get Christian Bale as Best Actor. I think that Best Supporting Actress is going to go to Sam... what's his last name?
Which Sam? Because I think
The Star is Born.
Elliot.
Sam Elliot, who doesn't have an Oscar yet, but has been a tremendous character actor all of his career. So I think those are pretty well assured. Best Supporting is a actress is a bigger concern. But I mean, Malick's the only one that really has a shot for that movie. So this coming out makes it uncomfortable for him. Meanwhile, it looks like every studio in the race has the Knives Out for Green Book, and it don't look like it's worked yet.
No, no. So, okay, Green Book is Green Book is interesting for me because I have not seen it, but I've heard the outrage about it, mostly from, you know, as we like to reference, Black Twitter, which it does not look favorably on Green Book.
Film Twitter doesn't look favorably on Green Book either.
See, I don't have enough of Film Twitter in my timeline to really know. The Film Twitter that I've seen is pretty much going like this. If it's Film Twitter and they're black, they hate Green Book. If they're white, they like Green Book.
And everybody that I follow is like, this is an embarrassment to film. Like, it's the standard by the book, like, hey, not all white people were bad during the 60s. And, you know, we're going to tell the story through the white male protagonist, you know, his eyes.
Yeah, and that,
we're going to kind of sideline the African-American homosexual man whose story we're trying to tell, allegedly. Because we're really not interested in that story. We're interested in our white guy coming around to understanding and that all black people are not evil.
That has been the general consensus that I've heard.
You could take this movie out of 2018 and put it in 2008 or 1998, and it would be in the same position. Because it's a safe film done in a safe way, and there is enough liberal base in the Academy that is not progressive, but is liberal, who wants something to vote for. Uh-huh. And this is a safe enough choice. Hey, I'm voting for a movie with an African-American lead. Hey, I'm voting for a movie that has a gay protagonist. Like, it feels safe enough. But if you look at the film itself and read the film itself as literature and what it's trying to say, it totally doesn't care about any of that. You know, and it's a major fun runner. That's the scary thing about it. Like, for the entirety, since October, since Toronto, like, it has been a Star is Born Roma race. Period. The favorite is going to be loved by the international community. There's not enough international vote in the Academy to propel it anywhere, just like Atonement. It's not going to go that far. So, all of a sudden now, in the last, since the guilds started, like, Green Book is, winning stuff.
Yes.
And that puts it in serious contender category. And if we end up with a hostless Oscars...
Which we have.
A hostless Oscars... that ends up awarding Best Picture of the Year to Green Book. The Dolby Theater, because they no longer call it the Kodak Theater, the Dolby Theater will burn to the ground.
It came out, before it came out, I heard all the buzz about it. It seemed like it would be an Oscar kind of movie. Then it came out, and then I heard all this other, exactly what you said, and it kind of faded out. But then, once the war started coming around, it's like coming back around. And even the people that I do follow, that follow film, are like, why is this back here? So it's nice to get that filled in.
For context, like, Chazelle's, like, First Man was, like, decent and was doing some really innovative and nice things. You can't find it anywhere near any of these categories.
Nope.
Like, it died away, a slow and painful death. And yet this movie, now I'm very happy for Linda Cardellini. You know how much affection I have for her going all the way back to Freaks and Geeks. Her run on Mad Men was fantastic. She's been doing some really great work over the last 10, 12 years of her career. From starting as a mental patient in Good Burger. So,
I always laugh when I see that now.
You know, and somebody should ask her while she's doing all this press when we're getting a Good Burger too. Because, you know, Kenan Thompson's now a, you know, Emmy-nominated guy. Pull Kel out of somewhere, and Shaq's not doing anything. And
Kel's still around. We don't need that.
We do. I mean, we just got the original Mighty Ducks cast all back together wearing their jerseys, and that was a very sentimental thing.
All right. At this point, I'm going to just disavow everything you just said. Just for context for the people listening, I'll read off the big categories. because there's a whole bunch of other ones that.
And you know, when the time that we record before the award show, I will actually go through all of these categories, although not all of them will be telecast.
Yeah. So we have Best Picture. So up we have Black Klansman, Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Green Book, Roma, A Star Is Born, and Vice.
I'm not sure whether or not Roma will be included in your marathons.
That's a good
or not due to it being a Netflix
on Netflix film. Yeah. Also note that this is Spike Lee's first Best Picture nomination
and his first Best Director nomination as well.
Best Director, we have Alfonso Cuarón for Roma, Spike Lee for Black Klansman, Pawel Pawlikowski,
who was the surprise entrant over Ryan Coogler for Best Director,
which I was not upset that he wasn't nominated for Best Director, though I could see the argument. But he's up for Cold War. I'm going to destroy this name. But Yorgos Lanthimos, The Favorite, and Adam McKay for Vice.
McKay just keeps racking up those Best Director nominations.
I still need to see The Big Short. I missed it the first time around. It was on Netflix, and it's going.
I'm going to be really interested to see if, like, eventually his career transitions.
To this kind of stuff? To more of this?
Well, no, transitions out of this.
Oh.
Because all he's done is political satire. Both his movies are political satire.
That's true.
So I don't want to see him end up in Inarritu territory where he's just doing highbrow, you know, challenging stuff. I want to actually see McKay make
a fun movie?
Yeah, a Marvel movie.
Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Best Actress. I'm going to butcher her name, too. I'm sorry. Yalitza Aparicio for Roma, Glenn Close for The Wife, Olivia Colman for The Favorite, Lady Gaga for A Star Is Born, and Melissa McCarthy for
Who Candy needs to be Ever sending Given. A bow of bouquets to Julianne Moore for passing on that film because of scheduling conflicts and opening it up for her.
Did her husband direct this movie?
Yes. But originally it was supposed... I don't think he directed it, but I think he's in it.
Okay.
Julianne Moore was the one selected for the role, and then she had to back out for scheduling reasons. But it doesn't really hurt, because Julianne Moore already has her Oscar from Still Alice.
Yeah,
Interesting fun fact about this category is I think it's going to come down between Coleman and Close, but there is the distinct possibility that the vote could split, which would make a way possible for Best Actress Lady Gaga.
I'm sure she has a Grammy, so she'd be a Tony and a Emmy. Wait, she might have an Emmy too, because she was on American Horror Story, so this might be the EGOT. Alright, Best Actor, we got Christian Bale for Vice, Bradley Cooper for A Star Is Born, Willem Dafoe for At Attorney's Gate.
The only nomination that movie got.
Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody and Viggo Mortensen for Green Book.
What is our simple rule, Chad, about the Academy? All you have to do is put on a heavy prosthetic and you win a statuette. Christian Bale's sweeping every single Best Act. It's very much like Gary Oldman a year ago. Like, he puts on a heavy prosthetic, he's going to get his statue.
Put on a heavy prosthetic and he, you know, gained like 40 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
That man is a different kind of method. All right, Best Supporting Actress. We got Amy Adams for Vice. Marina de Trevina. Treviara, Roma, Regina King for If Beale Street Could Talk, Emma Stone for The Favorite, and Raquel Weisz for The Favorite.
I think the two favorites will cancel each other out, and I think it'll be an interesting race from there.
Okay. Best Supporting Actor, we have Mahershala Ali for Green Book, Adam Driver for Black Klansman, Sam Elliott for A Star Is Born, Richard E. Grant for Can You Ever Forgive Me, and Sam Rockwell for Vice.
Again, I just feel like this is Sam Elliott's to lose at this point with the way everything else has gone.
And you're the first person I've heard say that. I've heard a lot of people say they think it's Mahershala again. So, we'll see. The only other one I want to say something about is Best Anime Feature. I'm not going to read the rest of them. Spider-Man's going to win this award. I just want to say that.
Sir, have way more confidence and affirmation in the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. That left off freaking Mr. Rogers and Three Identical Strangers.
That's what I was looking for, best documentary, which I cannot find, but that's what I want to say. I haven't even seen the movie yet, but everybody I know that's seen all these movies is like, why is Mr. Rogers not on this list? There's a Lego movie in this. There it is. Best documentary feature. There was no Mr. Rogers. There's a bunch of movies I've never seen or heard of. But again, documentaries is like that. Most people haven't heard of a lot of stuff. But
although everybody it's getting better. It's getting better with Netflix, and this has been an extraordinary year for documentaries. I mean, RBG and Mind in the Gap are both, you know, are both worthy of that. So, I mean, I can understand those. I have no faith and confidence in the Academy to actually award best picture, you know, the best anime feature to, you know, Spider-Man Home, Far From Home, or Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I think that it will probably end up being Incredibles 2, but that's just me.
Okay, so this is one of the few categories I can say I've seen most of the nominations except for the Miriar, which I'm assuming is from Japan. I haven't seen that, but I've seen Incredibles 2. I've seen Isle of Dogs, seen Ralph Breaks the Internet, and I've seen Spider-Man. Hands down, Spider-Man is the best movie of those.
Especially animation-wise.
They did new things with animation, stuff you've never seen, and just all together. I didn't hate any of those movies. I liked all of them, but like, I would, if I know this wouldn't happen, but if Into the Spider-Verse was in the Best Picture category, I'd be like, I am not surprised. So that tells me it should win this category. If it does not, we burn the sucker down.
Okay. So, Chad, let's move on. Aquaman's now the highest grossing movie in the history of the DC Cinematic Universe.
DC movie, period.
Yeah. Over $1 billion, Chad. Think about the fact that you have, in 2018, Infinity War, Black Panther, and Aquaman, all over $1 billion.
Well, first thing I say to that is, what fatigue? Second, I say, Aquaman is just, this whole thing is just amazing to me, just because of what Aquaman is. Aquaman has literally been the butt of jokes all the way up until this movie came out, and it's made more money than every DC character, all of them actually. Yeah, I was gonna say save for Batman, if you want to go cumulative with Batman, but solo wise, it has now taken out Batman, and a movie that came out in December, and it's just kept on going. So it's amazing to me. But every time I say that, I have to come back and like, so what are the lessons that DC is going to learn from this? And will they be the right ones? And I never know. I stopped trying to give them, I've given up, giving them the benefit of the doubt. I have no idea what they're going to do.
I'm comforted by the fact that we're almost now guaranteed a Wonder Woman trilogy with Patty, that she has this idea for the arc and where she wants it to go. That fills me with confidence. James Wan saying, you know, if the story's right, if they give me enough money, I'll come back and we'll do another one of these.
Dude, you just got $1 billion. That sound you hear is the Brink trucks backing up to your door, just unloading all the money you want. They're going to give it to you.
Right. So, and we know that there's a Batman movie, you know, that, you know, the director of multiple Planet of the Apes films, Matt Reeves, is trying to get off the ground for 2020, so... you've got a Joker movie that's, you know, being rewritten on set, but, you know, most of Joaquin's stuff is rewritten on set. I mean, that's how PTA works. So, I mean, I think they're in an okay spot.
So, okay, so my whole thing is, you know, before Aquaman came out, everyone still had the terrible taste of Justice League in their mouth. And to a man, everybody would say, if pre-production for Aquaman hadn't started before Justice League happened, there would be no Aquaman. So now that this has come out, the feeling was that people just, outside of Wonder Woman, who seemed to be Teflon to the effects of Batman vs. Superman and Justice League, nobody liked this version of these characters. And that's why DC was going to like quietly jettison parts that they felt didn't work. The whole time I was sitting there saying, how about you just take those parts? Because generally, people don't really hate the actors that you have. They just hate the stuff you had them do. Why don't you take these parts and give them better stuff to do? And to me, Aquaman is proof positive of that. you have a movie that's it took the part you had, which was Jason Momoa, took his Aquaman, put him in the story that people thought as Aquaman, and it made all the money. Now, it was also more or less a standalone movie. There was a reference to Justice League. It was nothing over the top. It's actually the way I think they should go. It's just like, you don't necessarily have to say anything about anything else, but just know that everybody that you saw before can potentially come back together. They don't need to come back together for a long time, because we need to forget that Justice League happened, but take those parts, let them do their own thing, put them back together later on, make a lot of money.
Wonder Woman and Aquaman have made a whole bunch of money.
Yes.
And you know what they have in common?
They let the directors do what they wanted.
Mr. Snyder had nothing to do with either one. I mean, yes, he kind of birthed the idea of Dude Bro Aquaman that you know, Juan just kind of ran with. But, like, in the context of Juan's movie, this had just been a solo origin story. Like, that's probably the same kind of Aquaman that Juan would have envisioned, because he didn't change much of anything about the way the character was presented in Justice League.
Nope.
So, like, Patty and Juan have been involved, and they've done great things with characters outside of Zack. So what would that tell you? It would just tell you that Zack's, you know, not needed.
Yeah.
Now you give Reeves the ability to go make a solo Batman movie, with or without Affleck, that reflects a younger Batman. And then you talk to Cavill about coming back, and now you're cooking with gas there, buddy.
See, that's the thing. Reeves is going to be without Affleck, and that's fine. I've accepted that Ben Affleck has gone as Batman. I think he could have done better with better stuff, but, you know, we're here, we're gone. Now, does Reeves, because they have this Joker movie that's completely standalone, does Reeves really pull his muscle and be like, I don't want anything to do with any of that stuff? Which I think would be a mistake. I think you can go, he can do whatever he wants. He doesn't have to say a thing about any of these other movies. And when the time comes, that Batman can show up when they get to that point. But does he want to do that? Don't know. Now, the whole thing with Henry, and actually that's why I kept so much of an eye on Aquaman, is that I genuinely believe people like Henry Cavill as Superman. They have hated every movie he's been in because they've hated the things that Superman has done. I think if you put him in a movie similar to Aquaman, where he's doing things that people think Superman should be doing, his movies will make all the money.
Because you have evidence of a Wonder Woman movie where Wonder Woman is doing the things that people associate with Wonder Woman, and you have an Aquaman movie where, you know, the depiction of Aquaman is faithful to what should be, and you haven't really gotten that with Zack's three iterations of Superman.
You got glimpses of it in the first one. Listen, he sunk this ship. He sunk Cavill's ship in Batman vs. Superman. Part of it wasn't his fault, because they cut off like 30 minutes of the movie, and of course it's all of Cavill's 30 minutes of the movie. The other part is that he made this convoluted, dark, depressing-ass story and stuck Superman in it, and instead of making him like, you know, the hope. And
The light
in that. He was just like, he was trying to be the light, and he just kept throwing mud on top of him. You couldn't see anything. You bring him back. He's right there. You just bring him back.
His interaction with Flash in Justice League was a bright spot.
Yeah, it's like, I think when he first showed up, when he first showed up in the costume in Justice League, I think if there's a meter on where you should begin it, I think they tilted a little bit too far to one side, but I don't think it was that far. I think this is close enough. I've seen Man of Steel a whole lot more than everybody else. The scene where, if you give people a Superman from when they come up with the plan to use his ship to get rid of Zod, and him at the end when he's talking to the general before he flies off, that's the range you should hit. You hit that, everybody's fine. So now it's just a matter of going to get Henry and actually being open and negotiating.
And you've got Shazam coming.
if Shazam is really keeping all that iconography from Batman vs Superman and stuff, and the way that movie looks, because that movie looks fun. It looks like it's gonna be a hit. And you keeping all those same visual cues from before, it just makes sense to go and get Henry. Just do it. Be done with it. I want a Superman movie tomorrow, but you can wait a couple years, but just go get him to do it.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. So, Chad, is there anything else you want to discuss today? Other than the fact that The Rock is one of the most busiest people on the planet and might make an appearance this evening in Phoenix, Arizona?
But dude, you're shooting a movie. You are shooting a freaking movie.
What about our good friends over at Dark Phoenix? I mean, they appear to be making a movie that no one actually is believing is going to happen.
Well, I think it's Trailer Tracker on Twitter. They're like, more than likely we're getting a trailer for this with...
Super Bowl.
No, they're saying Alita, because it's a Fox movie. So, in the next month, I think Alita comes out in February.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah, okay, so that's when we're looking at getting a trailer for Dark Phoenix. Now, this movie's coming, and the more I see from it, the more I hear about it. Nobody wants it to come, but here we are. It's probably going to be the last Fox proper project, period, that we see. And I just... Nothing about this movie sounds like it's going to be good at all. I feel sorry for everybody that's involved. I'm sorry.
I don't feel sorry for people who took huge paydays to come back.
Okay, okay.
I don't feel sorry for them. I feel sorry that someone thought it was a good idea to give Mr. Kimberg the reins to do the Dark Phoenix story.
Well, no, no. That's somebody that gets everything they deserve, because that was just dumb. I don't feel sorry for, like...
You know what's a very good idea? Let's go get the guy who wrote the last iteration of the Dark Phoenix story to do this version.
I don't understand how more people haven't pointed that out. It's like they just got amnesia because of First Class, and I don't know why, Days of Future Past. You know, I don't really care for that movie, but a lot of people did. This dude, from all accounts, he wrote X3. From all accounts, what Brett Ratner shot was what they wrote. I know Brett Ratner gets the messed up end of the stick, and he deserves it for a lot of stuff. I don't think he deserves it for X3. I think the guy that we have directing this movie is the one that deserves it, and we're still going to get his crappy vision of this movie. And I don't feel sorry for the bigger names in this movie. I feel sorry for the younger, smaller names of the kids that are like, I'm getting on this this blockbuster train to get my payday and make these movies for like the rest of my life, and they got on a sinking ship. They just didn't know it.
Yeah, Sophie Turner, for example.
Yeah, not her. I think she's going to be fine without it. But, like, Alexander Ship really comes to mind. Storm. It's not a good time for her. It's not. She got on this ship. No pun intended.
Hey, I feel bad for Dazzler because, she's not going to go anywhere. Her little mall scene got cut and, you know...
Yeah, but you know, too bad she didn't have another career to fall back on that could, you know, offer her up millions and adoration of fans in a different way. Yeah, she came out the worst in all this.
All right, Chad. So that'll about do it for this week's episode. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
And I'm at The Mets Theory.
We're efforting to try and get our good friend Jim Vavida back on the Movies on the Brain podcast prior to the Oscar telecast, so he can give us his predictions and thoughts on the politics of the Academy and their very awesome, amazing year that has been. We are also going to effort to get our good friend T-Bob Hebert back on the podcast. I am slated to be on there, slated to be with Nathan Velasquez at Incredible Mr. Nate and T-Bob Hebert at T-Bob 53. To do a Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers podcast, which should take another 2 hours of our lives, which you will be a very enjoyable thing. So we're looking forward to that. And of course, you can always look forward to our annual hour-plus-long episode where I go through every category and get every category wrong for the Academy Awards this year. So, for Chad, I'm Brian. Thank you very much. Pleasant evening.